This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is the Honorable Tom Davis, a former Virginia congressman, my former congressman here in Fairfax County, and former chairman of the House Government Reform Committee. He now serves as Director of Federal Government Affairs for Deloitte & Touche, LLP. Congressman, welcome to the show.
Roger, thanks for having me.
I'm looking forward to our discussion today. One of the things that you are known most for, from my perspective, is your knowledge of national politics, frankly, you know, congressional district by congressional district. And today I thought it'd be a great opportunity to talk to you about the prospects for November 2012, what the election looks like. So why don't we just get started? And, you know, first, just can you talk a little bit about coming out of the gate right now, obviously, as the election's been going lately for the president, there have been nail biters, or close at least. Where are we right now in terms of the Electoral College, and what are the numbers looking like, leaning Obama, Romney, and undecided?
Well, Roger, let me just start by saying the economic metrics for this election, I think, foretell that this is going to be a competitive election. Meaning either party, either side could win it at this point. We're going to be looking at where unemployment numbers are, where our gas prices as you go into the fall, what's happening in Europe. You've had war scandals, all these things play into the mix. And my experience has been that 5 months is an eternity in politics. So really anything can happen on the presidential front. I think on the congressional front, when you look at the House of Representatives, they have 435 members, all but seven will be running in new districts, will at least been had some alteration to them since the last election. If you look at it in total, the Republicans were advantaged by the redrawings, and they have a 25-seat lead in the House. So it's going to be difficult, not impossible, but difficult for the Democrats to take control of the House of Representatives in this next election, for a number of current and historical reasons. The Senate, on the other hand, the Democrats control currently 53-47, but the Democrats have 23 seats up for re-election, the Republicans only 10. So the Republicans have a shot at coming back in the Senate. We can get into some of the races as the discussion goes on, but basically you have a competitive Senate and presidential campaigns. The House looks a little more solidly Republican going into November.
Okay, and one of the things I really wanted to ask you off the bat is, we just had the recall election in Wisconsin, and does that inform where things are going right now?
I think it's pretty Wisconsin-centric. The interesting thing to note in this election is everybody talks about the turnout model in November of 2010 for the Republicans. You got about 300,000 more people voted in this recall than voted in 2010. In the initial race for governor, the Republican performed 2 points better, going from 52 to 54%. But even with that, this is Wisconsin issues. These are issues that are really not nationalized. So it would be hard to read it too much into it at this point.
Is that, because you see some of the pundits and articles talking about what's the impact on, on the unions. But it seems to me, to your point, I think sort of the opposite thing happened in Ohio with regard to collective bargaining.
Yeah, this was the Wisconsin election was more than just a referendum on collective bargaining, because the Democrats had to actually put up a candidate, the mayor of Milwaukee, Tom Barrett, who I had served in the House with. And interestingly enough, Barrett was the candidate who had run in 2010. So you're really measuring apples to apples when you measure the turnout in 2010 and the special election turnout this year. But these are Wisconsin issues specific. These were not national in terms of what it characterized. The exit polls actually showed that among the people that showed up, if the election were today, Obama would have beaten Romney. So I wouldn't read a lot into it. I think Wisconsin will be a competitive race this fall, but I don't think it portends to the end for the Democrats by any means.
Okay, well, you know, let's turn back to sort of the big picture and talk about presidential politics for a few minutes. And, you know, just what are the, you know, where do you see the key states or the key battleground states? I mean, there's the, you know, the blue and red, and then there's purple. And, you know, one of the state, obviously, that I'm interested in is Virginia and how Obama won it last time. And is that model, you know, there for him again?
Well, Obama won Virginia by a wide margin. He won Virginia by a higher percent than he got in Ohio last time. And he won it in Northern Virginia. He carried Northern Virginia by 233,000 votes. I don't know that he'll do as well this time. I would doubt it. But that's a pretty steep hill for the Republicans to climb in terms of changing the outcome from the last election. So Republicans are finding Virginia to be a little more stubborn than some of these other states that may be switching back to Romney, like Indiana and North Carolina. The key for Democrats is Northern Virginia. Northern Virginia has a lot of federal workers and a lot of federal contractors. And when candidates come out with rhetoric that can be perceived as being anti-government and cutting government, it doesn't have the same kind of perceptive audience in Northern Virginia that you find in other suburbs around the country. In addition to that, Northern Virginia has a huge multi-ethnic population. The president's pronouncement about giving some a level of immunity to children from foreign countries that were here illegally but were not brought here on their own accord is going to have some resonance with these groups. Some of the anti-immigrant rhetoric coming out of some elements of the Republican Party don't help Romney. So he's got to be able to overcome that to reduce those margins from 28 that President Obama rung up in Fairfax and Arlington and Alexandria.
You know, just keeping up on that announcement today about not deporting, children. How does that, I assume that also sort of would play the same way in a place like Florida in terms of the Hispanic?
Well, it's all different. Well, I see it's all a little different. You know, Hispanic voters are not all alike. For example, Puerto Ricans are citizens, so they're not worried about the same issues that maybe Mexican Americans are. And Cubans don't have the same level of immigration issues, and they tend to be more Republican. So I don't think you can characterize the Hispanic vote as monolithic in any sense of the word. But look, immigration and a party appearing to be a welcoming party, wanting these groups to be part of their coalition, plays a role in how these groups are going to vote. And I think the president is playing his hand at that right now, trying to chin up a good multi-ethnic turnout for him this next election. He had it in 2008. With the job losses and the like, he's had trouble rekindling it. You know, we'll see if this is successful or not. There's still a long way to go.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit about Ohio? I mean, Governor Romney and President Obama have spent a lot of time there in the last week talking economics. How does that? I mean, we're 5 months out, but what are the keys there?
Well, Ohio's economy is not doing nearly as well as Virginia's. Of course, with Virginia having so much based on government spending has continued. So our economic engine is still going full boat in Virginia. In Ohio, a lot of it has been manufacturing. A lot of these jobs have been lost. The Republicans tend to do much better in the rural areas and the ex-urban areas. Democrats do better in Columbus and in Cleveland and then in the Mahoning Valley up there around Youngstown. That's basically been their strength, along Lake Erie. There's a larger blue-collar population in Ohio. Blue-collar whites tend to be more Republican at this stage than white-collar whites. It's the exact opposite of where it was 20 years ago. So when you look at the demographics of Ohio, this is a state that Republicans have never won the presidency without winning Ohio. It appears to be a pretty crucial state. As in Virginia, they have a crucial Senate race up this time as well. And I think all you can say right now is it's going to be a competitive race. We'll see how the issues play out and where the economy is in the fall to have a better understanding of where Ohio comes down. But it's certainly a state to watch. And I think for Republicans, both Virginia and Ohio are very important.
Right. Well, Tom, we do have to take a break right now, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Tom Davis, former Virginia congressman, former chairman of the House Government Reform Act, Reform Committee and Reform Act, who now serves as director of federal government affairs for Deloitte. And we're talking election politics. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Hahn Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Hahn's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Hahn Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Hahn's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Hahn lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Hahn Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
Here's Rick Holgate, Assistant Director for Science and Technology and CIO for the ATF, on a recent Client Virtualization Solutions panel discussion sponsored by GovConnection, HP, and VMware.
There are now much better options out there that rely less on specific devices or having to provision specific hardware to users, and we can instead be much more flexible about the devices that our users use and the locations from which they access the services. So it's evolving the infrastructure to support that from a very laptop and PC centric model to one that's much more device agnostic and flexible going forward.
VMware View helps federal IT leaders comply with the Telework Enhancement Act, meet COOP initiatives, and solve the access control dilemma. HP Thin clients have been certified to work with VMware View Manager. This end-to-end solution allows you to simplify desktop management, reduce costs, improve data protection, and promote compliance. GovConnection is your one-stop resource for all of your IT projects. Visit govconnection.com/federalVDI for more details today.
This week on Agency of the Month, Kathy Hudson, Director of Human Resources at the National Security Agency, said,
"So the good news is that we have a better understanding, perhaps better than ever before, of threats to our systems. We have a better understanding of the capabilities, the motivations, and the intentions of adversaries. The not so good news is that our nation's systems really are not yet up to par with regards to being properly defended to protect against the myriad of threats and threat actors that we see on a daily basis."
Agency of the Month, Wednesday mornings at 11 a.m. in June. Sage Management is a leader in finding solutions to national security challenges within federal and state government. Being a small, veteran-owned business, the leaders at Sage Management understand the importance of offering professional, streamlined services quickly and effectively. Their mission is to apply sound business management practices, proven engineering solutions, and community expertise in all aspects of national security. To find out more about Sage Management and career opportunities, visit sage-mgt.net.
Life's big decisions require some research. You get comparison reports before you buy a car. You hire an inspector when buying a house. You might even look up someone online before a date. But when you go to pick your primary care physician, sometimes you only get a name and number. That hardly seems fair. After all, the only person who has more influence on your health is you. It's different at Kaiser Permanente. All our doctors are listed online with information that paints a picture of who they are, so you know you're picking a doctor who is right for you, right for your family, and someone you can email. Oh, here's one for Dr. Amy Benoulis, who went to Northwestern. Dr. Lindsay Strickland is interested in chronic disease management and is accepting new patients. Bingo! Become a member, and no matter whom you choose, you get a true advocate for your health. So log on to kp.org/doctor and check us out. It could be the beginning of a healthy relationship. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852. it probably set back the program for a couple of years.
Well, maybe
they kept. But this demonstrated that cyber weapons could physically destroy critical infrastructure. Now, the problem is we have SCADA devices attaching all of the infrastructure we have in the U.S. Our dams, our electrical power grid, everything is remotely controlled by the Internet. And there are always a SCADA device in between the Internet connection and what the device is doing.
Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. May I help you?
Yeah, my car's entertainment system just isn't cutting it.
Easy answer. Get an HD radio receiver, 100% free digital sound, digital traffic, and great music choices from your local HD2, HD3 radio stations.
Well, what brands do you have?
Best Buy has new expanded HD radio inventory. Alpine, Kenwood, Pioneer, JVC, with prices as low as $120.
Wow, an HD radio digital entertainment center? Show me the way. HD radio. More radio, more value.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we are talking to former Congressman Tom Davis, my congressman here in Northern Virginia, and former chairman of the House Government Reform Committee. He now serves as a director for federal government affairs for Deloitte, LOP. Tom, when we took a break, we were talking about Ohio, and I guess that's sort of I wanted to ask you another question, and that is, what is different this time going into the, his reelection campaign for Obama that wasn't in place or happening back in 2008?
Well, the atmospherics are very, very different for the president this time. If you recall, in 2008, at that point, Senator Obama was running against the Republican Party and a very unpopular president in George W. Bush. He wasn't running, but his popularity was in the 20s. You had two wars that were very unpopular. President Obama had a 2-to-1 spending advantage in that race because he did not take the federal match, which restricts your funding, which Senator McCain did. And then even with all that against him, the economy collapsed in September on President Bush's watch. And so Republicans took the blame on that. So he had tremendous momentum going into that election with what I call the metrics heavily in at that point, Senator Obama's favor. And he ended up winning with 53%. That doesn't sound like a lot, but it was the largest presidential win since 1988.
Yeah,
the president has none of that. He's had to govern for 4 years. You've had unemployment sustained at 8% or more now for the full time he's been in office. And he has to take some accountability for that. And so it's a different dynamic for the president. Now, he's had a number of notable accomplishments, whether it's the capturing of Bin Laden, whether it's his health care bill. You can argue that he didn't make things worse. He has some bragging rights to some of the things that have gone on, saving the auto industry. These are issues, at least from the Democratic narrative, that he's going to be talking about. But governing is very tough, particularly in tough economic times. And I think that the president takes a hit on that, and that makes it a little more difficult than the last time. On the other hand, the president can make news anytime they want. They're in control of the agenda, as we've seen with this recent immigration action of his for kids who were born outside this country that came here illegally. He has the bully pulpit, the ability to get some things done that he didn't have the last time. So it's a different atmospheric entirely, going from offense basically to defense.
Yeah, he's having to, and as you point out, he's having to defend a record, and he's got some victories, as you mentioned, and there's obviously some still some challenges. And to get back to the economy, does that does fundamentally boil down, doesn't it, to how people are feeling, whether they feel, regardless of the unemployment rate, is there a psychology about whether folks feel we're going the right way or not in terms?
Absolutely. I mean, this is all, it's not all psychological, but you'll find some of the highest unemployment areas the president will carry well. He's going to carry those areas. They're not necessarily blaming him, or they like his actions better than maybe Governor Romney's. But it creates an atmosphere where people just not in a good mood and not sure the country's going in the right direction. And whether you make the right policy decisions or not, you can argue. But presidents get held accountable for outcomes. And right now, the economic outcome is not good. And the president is going to have to get a narrative where he makes sure that voters are more comfortable with his policies than Governor Romney's, that he can blame President Bush and try to show some progress. And that's the case he's got to make, and he's got another 4.5 months to make it. Right now, though, it looks like a very tight election.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about, and I know I've heard you talk a little bit about it before, and that's and whether it's called the cultural divide in terms of people voting these days, or the nexus between government benefits and how people are voting. And
sure, I think what we find, the basic alignments politically today, the parties are pretty ideologically sorted. Democrats own the cities. Republicans own the rural areas, with three exceptions, basically college towns, majority-minority counties, and what I call the granola belt, you know, Aspen, Sun Valley, Idaho, Teton County, Jackson Hole, Wyoming. These are great trendy, tony rural areas that go Democratic. And the suburbs are the basic battleground. Outer suburbs tend to be a little more Republican, inner suburbs a little more Democrat. That's the basic alignment we've seen the last three elections. And I think that's going to hold this time. Fast-growing suburbs tending to be more Republican. Areas with less growth tending to be more Democrat. It's pretty fixed at this point. The mold is hardened on that. So you're talking about maybe 15% of the vote that's malleable, that is gettable or switchable from one party to the other.
Is that 15%, is that like your soccer moms, or is it the, you know, women vote?
I wish you could put it in one pot. NASCAR dads, so
right.
I think it's a little bit of everything. I think at every layer there are people who are uneasy about the economy that are going to be looking to switch, or who feel that they have the right man at the helm. And the election is going to be geared at those people. A lot of Americans have already made up their mind on this. They're either Republican or they're going to be Democrat. They either like what's going on and feel confident with the leadership they have, or they want to change. So you're going to find the campaigns geared to those undecided voters, and also geared to maximizing the vote that they already have, hardening the base, and what we call in election cycles, mobilization election, where they're spending a lot of time getting the base all riled up so that they can get them out to vote in record numbers. The president was very good at this 4 years ago.
In turn, another question I want to ask you is what are the, you know, dynamics, if that's the right word or cliche, but what does it mean with regard to Romney and his choice of a vice presidential running mate?
Well, I think it's it plays a role. Vice presidents are not irrelevant. You don't want to make a mistake. And this will be the first time people get to see how Romney would govern. His vice presidential pick is the first window into how he would govern. So people will read different things into it. Does he make a strategic choice where he goes for a state like a Florida or Virginia or Ohio? Does he go for somebody with experience who can balance off Washington experience with what the governor have outside Washington? Does he go for somebody like him? I think those are the considerations, and I think the electorate at large will be looking for the first clue as to how the governor would make his decisions and what he would do as president.
And another issue that I know, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, analysis of at certain points, especially during the primaries, is the evangelical vote and their, I guess, comfort level with Governor Romney. How do you see that playing out and going into the?
I think the evangelical vote will be very heavily Romney at this point. Because the question is, can he mobilize that vote and get it out in bulk? There are some elements of the evangelical community that are probably not bowled over by Romney, but they probably prefer him to Obama. And the question for the governor is, can he mobilize those people and get them out in record numbers? But I don't think there's any question which way the evangelical vote will go. There has been a lot of discussions about they don't like Mormons and the like, but I think they like Obama less. than those concerns. And what we have seen is a number of the self-styled evangelical leaders come out for Romney.
All right. Okay. Well, Tom, we do have to take a break right now, but when we return, we'll be talking more with the Honorable Tom Davis, former Virginia Congressman and former chairman of the House Government Reform Committee, now director of Federal Government Affairs for Deloitte, LLP. And we'll be talking, we'll turn a little bit to Congress and what's going on there. And I think my first question for you is going to be about gerrymandering and what it means for the next election. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Hahn Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Hahn's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Hahn Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Hahn's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Hahn lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Hahn Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Here is Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, from the panel discussion, The Federal IT Challenge, Where is the Digital Government Strategy on the Journey to the Cloud? Brought to you by VMware.
As agencies go to hybrid clouds, there's software running in a service provider's cloud, there's software running in another service provider's cloud, and there's software running in the private cloud. How do you tie it together so the end user sees only one environment and they don't know, they don't care where all that is? That's where platform comes in. The access control mechanisms from a security standpoint, one to present, but other to provide that access, glues it together. And so that part needs to come along as well. So in short, it is part of the journey, and the end user computing part can lead the platform, but the platform cannot be too far behind, right? They've got to kind of go in lockstep.
That's Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Chief Cloud Officer for VMware Federal. And I'm Jason Miller.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com. Keyword, VMware.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
I'm Kurt Krause, General Manager of the National Conference Center in Leesburg, Virginia. Recent overspending by the GSA has triggered drastic meeting and travel restrictions that are short-sighted. The fact is, most government departments spend sensibly. Training is critical for every organization's success, including the government and our military. These sweeping changes will negatively impact our industry and the economy. See my letter in the Washington Post advocating long-term solutions, not short-sighted reactions. And for responsible meeting options, visit conferencecenter.com.
Paid for by the National Conference Center.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
Hi, I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
Instead of daily nicotine patches or pills, an experimental anti-smoking treatment aims to prevent the pleasures of smoking through vaccination. The vaccine is made of tiny biodegradable particles engineered to instigate an immune response against nicotine. Lloyd Johnston of Selecta Biosciences says it could work for years.
DARD vaccine goes away, but we've taught the body how to make antibodies.
Those antibodies latch onto nicotine molecules, making them too big to cross the blood-brain barrier.
We essentially make your blood like a big sponge for nicotine so it never gets to the brain, and therefore you don't get the reward effects of smoking, which makes it easier to stop smoking, but more importantly, it helps prevent relapse.
To find out more about this and other engineering innovation stories, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. That's www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we are talking to the Honorable Tom Davis, former Virginia Congressman and former Chairman of the House Government Reform Committee. Tom now serves as Director for Federal Government Affairs for Deloitte. And we're talking election politics. And I wanted to turn a little bit to Congress, Tom, and talk a little bit about the prospects there. And, you know, the first thing, I guess this is, and if I get my math right, this is the first election post census. And, you know, we get into all the gerrymandering, that sort of thing. How is that played out this cycle?
Well, Roger, the congressional district lines in both states are drawn by the legislatures, and the Republicans, because of the 2010 election, tend to dominate these legislatures. So the lines have been, I think, if anything, jury-rigged for the most part in the Republicans' favor. In Maryland, it was the opposite. In Maryland, the Democratic legislature drew lines that they thought would eliminate Roscoe Bartlett's seat. So it works, but on balance, the Republicans were able to strengthen their hold on the seats that they held, and they have a 25-seat majority. But more importantly, when you talk about Congress right now, you got to say, what are they have put off most major decisions. Will be put off until after the election into what's called a duck session, where you have a number of members who are at that point retired, will be voting along with members who are returning on issues that probably should have been tackled during this two-year period. Issues like the appropriation bill that need to be in place by October 1st, but haven't been done on time by Congress since 1996. Issues like the extension of the Bush tax cuts. What are they going to do with those issues? Extension of the payroll tax cuts, tax extenders, what we call the doc fix for Medicare, that will, the reimbursements are due to go way down for doctors under previous legislation. And Congress has, in a series of one-year efforts, continued to keep those numbers up so doctors won't flee providing Medicare coverage. There's an alternative minimum tax pick that needs to be done for the code every year. That's going to be put off till after the election. There's another debt ceiling rise that will have to happen. That will be put off till after the election. There's a transportation bill that they haven't been able to reauthorize. The House and Senate have different versions. I don't think they're going to get that done until after the election. You have a number of other bills, postal fixes and the like, that Congress has talked about, cyber laws. They may or may not get this done, but I think most of this is going to happen and be put off till after the election. And then the question is, will they even get it done then when the electoral pressure's off? By and large, though, the record's been pretty dismal. There's been very little cooperation between the House and the Senate, between the Republicans in the House and the Democrats in the Senate, and you've gotten a gridlock on steroids.
And why is that from your perspective? What is sort of, you know, where we've gotten to a point where it does, where we have, you just went through a very, very long list of things that aren't going to get done. Why are we in this situation?
Right. And I didn't even get into immigration or energy policy or the basic things that government should. I'm just getting to the things that need to be done this year that still may not get done.
Well, you know what? You're making my head hurt, I'm telling you.
The problem is most members of Congress now view their primary race for re-election as their primary election, not the general election. In the House, the way these districts are drawn, they're one-party districts. The other party doesn't have a chance most times. So members view their primary electorate, they're either their Republican or their Democratic base, as the key to their victory. And primary voters, as we have seen, do not reward compromise. They like their candidate to stand up and stand tall for principle, not compromise. Hold the line. And that creates a very difficult atmosphere for members who want to compromise and sometimes come to some conclusion on these difficult issues. That's the fundamental problem. These problems are also, I would say, reinforced by the media models where you have Fox and MSNBC and talk radio and the internet that tend to be polarizing in terms of the way they disseminate news. And then campaign finances are now, the money has moved away from political parties out to interest groups. Campaign finance reform basically limited the number of dollars that political parties could raise. It made it harder for parties to raise money. And instead of that money disappearing, that money has gone out, again, on steroids, out to interest groups on the right and the left, which instead of being a centering influence have been basically polarizing influences. I think all these factors combined have made it difficult for leaders to get together and cut the kind of deal that used to get done routinely.
Well, do you have any optimism that these deals will eventually will be cut because they have to be?
Well, usually it takes, what we're seeing is Congress waits for a crisis, and then they usually overreact. That's been kind of the cycle of the last two or three Congresses. They wait for a crisis and overreact. So you wait and pass a Dodd-Frank after the meltdown instead of taking steps beforehand, the common sense steps that might have been taken. So traditionally now Congress is in a reactive mode, not a proactive mode. Electorates generally don't reward proactive politicians.
Right, because everybody wants to be sort of left alone, I guess, or like don't do anything.
Well, nobody likes paying more, and they all want more services, and that's what the political leaders seem to be giving them. And sooner or later, the string is up. You run out of money.
Right.
And that's what's happening now.
So, it sounds like to me that the your view is that the parties have been marginalized, and that's not really a good thing in the long run in terms of trying to figure out how to solve problems.
The parties have been marginalized. They have been supplanted by interest groups and ideological groups. So parties have been the centering force in American democracy for 200 years. Now, because of campaign finance and what we call the Citizens United case out of the Supreme Court, they're very marginalized. They offer ballot access, some organizational relief, but the money, which is the mother's milk of politics, is really moved out to interest groups.
Right.
And they say he who pays the piper calls the tune.
Right. Well, how would you fix it? What would you do?
I'd go back to the old way. I mean, I think I would keep that money within the political parties as opposed to moving it to groups. I think disclosure laws right now are all over the map. You need to tighten those. Ultimately, people who want to contribute to the process are going to find a way to do that. And I think giving it directly to parties and candidates is a better, a more efficient route and a more accountable route for voters to be able to judge actions.
In that regard, just talking about parties, there is the, what role, and I'm changing directions real quickly here, I guess, and just throwing it. Yeah. I just wanted to ask you about the Tea Party and its role in this election cycle. It seems more muted than the last time around, like 2010.
Well, the Tea Party is no longer the new thing. They're still around. They're probably not married to the Republicans yet. They're probably still dating. But look, they are focused on the debt issue, which is an important issue that most political leaders don't focus on, because the debt isn't yet here and now. It's still in the distance, although it's getting closer and closer to the day of reckoning. But the Tea Party are still a very viable force in the Republican primary, and they are still a mobilization force in general elections. But they're no longer new like they were 2 years ago, so I don't think they get the same kind of attention from the press.
All right. Well, right now we do have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with the Honorable Tom Davis, former Virginia congressman, former chairman of the government reform, the House Government Reform Committee, and now the director of government affairs for Deloitte LLP. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is Amtower. What's recession-proof goes on an annual spending spree and is a must-add to your client list. The answer is Global One, the U.S. federal government. My show, Amtower Off-Center, talks about the good, the bad, the ugly, and the just plain silly things that go along with doing business with the federal government. It's no holds barred radio, and it's on every Monday afternoon at noon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Staying focused on your mission requires making smart decisions and mitigating unnecessary risks. That's why many agencies turn to GSA. With unparalleled experience in acquisition and financial compliance and technical expertise, GSA makes it easy for federal civilian and military customers to maintain mission focus and enhance program performance by adding value. With trained professionals in contracting, financial, and program management, GSA stands ready to help execute large-scale and/or complex and/or sensitive IT and professional services projects while maintaining seamless compliance with today's tough mandates. With GSA, you gain a trusted partner to ensure delivery promises are kept on time, on budget, and at best value. To learn how GSA can help, call 703-605-3699. That's 703-605-3699. Or visit gsa.gov/AAS. That's gsa.gov/AAS. GSA, providing custom solutions to your complex requirements.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
Accenture, high performance delivered. It's how we help clients take on their most complex challenges. We help manage the world's largest biometric systems to protect U.S. citizens. And we help more than 20,000 U.S. communities better respond to natural disasters. As a partner with both public and private industry knowledge, Accenture brings unique insights to help federal organizations in their efforts to protect citizens at home and abroad. Accenture, high performance delivered. To learn more, visit accenture.com/federal.
At the Jeep brand, we've been on active duty for over 70 years, in conditions you can imagine and some you can't. And like our soldiers, we never shy away from a challenge. So we'd like to honor our Armed Forces outstanding service during the Jeep military event. Get $500 military bonus cash toward a new 2012 Jeep vehicle. After so much time and service to others, we're giving our soldiers the recognition they deserve. Jeep. Hurry into your local Jeep dealer or visit Jeep.com for this special military offer, along with other great incentives on the full line of legendary Jeep vehicles. Offer available to active military and military reserve, and to retired military and military reserve, with honorable discharge and 20 years of service within 6 months of discharge date on a retail purchase or lease. Excludes SRT models. See dealer for details. Jeep is a registered trademark of Chrysler Group, LLC.
Thank you.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by Learning Tree International.
Learning Tree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality, instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by Learning Tree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Here in the metro area, you'll find interesting people, top-notch restaurants, great sports teams, and plenty of monuments and museums. And here is where you'll find your next career, as a civilian employee of the United States Coast Guard. A career in the U.S. Coast Guard offers you stability, excellent federal benefits, and a flexible work schedule. So if you're looking for that next opportunity, consider the U.S. Coast Guard, where your career is how you serve. To find out more, visit the United States Coast Guard website at coastguardcivilian.com/federal. The U.S. Coast Guard is an equal opportunity employer.
The CIO Council's recently released digital government strategy goes beyond mobile technology to rethink the way federal agencies manage information and interact with citizens. The shared platform approach not only addresses data, application, and device management, but also how to mitigate the threat of security breaches. Join AFCEA Bethesda on June 20th at the Bethesda North Marriott for a discussion about how agencies transform this policy into action. Register at afceabethesda.org/junebreakfast.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, we are talking to the Honorable Tom Davis, former Virginia Congressman, former chairman of the House Government Reform Committee, and now heads up the government affairs for Deloitte LLP. And we've been talking election, politics, what's going on, what the prospects are. But when we closed the last segment, you started talking a little bit about the debt and the Tea Party and its interest in addressing the debt. And I think what I'd like to do is just give you an opportunity to talk about what we face as a country moving forward with regard to the debt and why it is so important to address.
We face two problems. One is the short-term problem of unemployment and the economy being in the tank. But the longer-term problem is the huge debt we have run up. And we don't know how long-term that problem. It could be a short-term problem as well. So those are our issues at this point. And how do you go after the debt in the context of a bad economy? But let me just give you some numbers. We basically are spending right now about 25% of GDP is what the government spends. That's government, federal government. And yet the income of government is only 15% of GDP. That means that we are borrowing 40 cents for every dollar the government spends. That's three straight years. That's what we've done. That is just clearly unsustainable. It is masked today. We don't see the results of this because interest rates are so artificially low. But the majority of U.S. debt is short-term. And it can change very, very quickly. And as those interest rates rise, they're going to crowd out other items in the federal budget. And at that point, we go into a downward spiral really quickly. And economically, our situation becomes not better, it becomes worse.
And you got me depressed coming and going. But thinking about
Let me say this. This is a resolvable issue. This isn't a problem that can't be solved. It's just there's a lot of political pain to solving it. But I would say the pain is mandatory, but the suffering is optional. Look, you've got to get spending in line with what your income is. And you can do that any number of ways. You can raise revenue. There are economic consequences to that. You can cut your spending, there are economic consequences to that. There are political consequences to all of these issues. But they're resolvable issues. What it takes is the willpower of the body politic, Republicans and Democrats, to come together because we know one thing. We know if we don't do it, that we're an airplane that's going to crash into the mountain. And that is unsustainable. And that is, we do blow up. And then they'll be looking back at the people who made these decisions saying, why didn't you do this earlier? But they are clearly resolvable problems. They're not easily solved, or they would have been solved a long time ago. But they're very solvable problems.
Are there some things that you see as priorities to how to solve the problem from your perspective?
Well, everybody has different priorities. Simpson Bowles had had some spending increases. They had some budget cuts. Congress has tried to do this in small pieces, but this is solvable.
Right.
But people have to be able to make tough decisions. And frankly, my experience has been politicians like being reelected. And you don't get reelected for making tough decisions that disappoint a lot of people. And I'm afraid that's the price that you need here. That's the price of getting this done. Somebody's going to have to make some very unpopular decisions and make some tough choices. And those choices haven't been made in a long time. So instead of making the choice to raise more revenue or making the choice to cut some programs or entitlements, they just end up sending the bill to the next generation. And sooner or later, the markets say the bill is due. And they're going to demand higher interest rate or quit buying the bonds altogether. And the other thing I note is we are hardly the only government in this country, in this world, that is undergoing this, or in this country. We have states undergoing similar problems with
California,
pension liability and the like. So it's a global problem.
Right. And, maybe I'll ask the question a little different. How, do you have a prediction or how you think it might sort out in terms of a compromise solution to this?
Well, a compromise solution.
Plan, let's say, to address it.
Everybody's going to have to belly up to the bar. And I think all programs, entitlements take a haircut. There's going to have to be some increased revenue. You cannot easily solve this just going one route on this. And sooner or later, the political leaders of both parties will get together, either under duress from the markets or the voters, and we'll try to solve it.
Yeah. Well,
I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening before this election or before the next Congress.
Do you see it happen? I mean, at some point, it's going to have to happen, right? Because the piper will have to be paid.
If the politicians don't take care of it, the marketplace will, and then you end up in something like Greece, and that's unacceptable. We've had a number of cities going bankrupt. I mean, the markets eventually take care of this. We won't go bankrupt because we can always print more money, but you end up with inflation, which is, in many ways, even more harmful to different groups than the current status.
Right. Yeah, I'm old enough to remember inflation in the 70s and what that meant, and the interest rates as well.
Well, stagflation, they call it.
Yeah.
The Carter Misery Index.
Yeah, the Misery Index. Yeah, absolutely. I remember all that. So.
Yeah. Well, that's what you end up with. But look, these are tough choices, and the problem is voters punish politicians who make tough choices, so you put them off as long as you can.
Well, and Tom, I hope there's a compromise. I believe there will be at some point that addresses this. But I do want to thank you for being on the show today. I want to thank my guest, the Honorable Tom Davis, former Virginia congressman, former chairman of the House Government Reform Committee, and now the head of government affairs for Deloitte LLP. I'm Roger Waldron, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. As a manager, you need to know how you can make your organization more efficient. Listen for Management Friday on Federal News Radio. We bring you information on the keystone of success for any agency or business. Friday mornings at 10, listen for AFGE's perspective on inside government. Next at 11, Shaw, Bransford, and Roth talk about the legal implications of management decisions on Fed Talk. And at noon, listen for Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch to hear what career options may be available. Management Friday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.